EWTN Global Catholic Radio presents John of the Cross, The Great Exchange. Insights into the writings of St. John of the Cross, founder of the Discalced Carmelite Order. Now here is your host, Father Thomas Dubay.
Welcome once again to St. John of the Cross and the Gospel's Great Exchange. You may recall that we concluded our discussion last week with a definition of attachment. Let me just mention it once more to refresh our minds. It's clinging to something created with the will for its own sake. A clinging of the will to something created for itself, making it, therefore, a little bit of an idol, and can be that idol a great impediment to loving God and loving others, as we shall be seeing. Now, we take up with some signs that answer a question that is probably in your mind. When does seeking things created become excessive? When is it selfish? When is it an idol? How do you know when you are using things or seeking things or wanting things selfishly? I'm going to offer three signs. John does not mention these as such, but they certainly prepare us to understand him well. The first sign that I'm making idols out of God's creation is that I divert the thing from its intended purpose to some other reason, usually a selfish reason. For example, if I use speech to lie, which is not a mental reservation, a real blatant lie, I'm misusing speech because our intellects and our speech are given to us to communicate. Therefore, to come closer to others, to help others, to be informed, and all sorts of really good reasons for speech. I'm using some speech right now. But when I use it to lie, I'm being antisocial. I deceive you for some reason less than noble, to put it mildly, and I'm misusing speech. I'm attached to something. When I speak idly, which means idle chatter, of which the Lord said we shall give account of every idle word on Judgment Day, meaning that it's useless. It doesn't benefit me. It doesn't benefit you. It doesn't benefit a third party. It's useless. And there will be some unworthy motive behind it. At least there will be impeding some great good that could happen if I did use my speech properly. So it's a misuse again of speech. If I misuse speech to bicker and quarrel, obviously, it's not bringing us closer together, quite the contrary, because a quarrel is a little verbal fight. It's not a discussion of something, which can be very amiable and proper and a fine use of speech. And so if I misuse speech, to use that example again, obviously I'm attached to something. Lust is another example. Sexuality is very good indeed. It is so good that God has protected it with a number of indicators that in marriage it is beautiful, and it's beautiful always in itself, but not the use of it always, and certainly not for itself. So that if one uses sexuality as God intended, very good indeed. If one makes a little idol out of it, it's excessive, and certainly there's an attachment to it. It's egocentrically using people with no love, no genuine love, and no genuine commitment. So that's the first sign. When we divert something from its intended purpose, we are attached to it. The second sign of misuse is excess. Too much of something that is good. Too much, for example, eating or drinking or television or traveling or spending excessively on clothes or jewelry or trinkets or superfluities or furniture, or types of car, too much of it. It's not needed. Doesn't serve any good purpose. If I've got that much of the world's goods, I should be sharing them with people who are destitute and don't even have necessities. So that if, for instance, to make it real concrete, if I were to say to myself, well, back to our example of the apple pie again, I eat apple pie, I say to myself, maybe to somebody else as well, I eat apple pie because I'm detached from it, and I really do it for the honor and glory of God, as St. Paul says, whatever you eat or drink, all for His glory. And I always eat peach pie, apple pie, any kind of pie, for the glory of God. And so, at the end of this meal, I shall take a second piece of peach pie. But that's for the glory of God, too. Now, just a minute. That one is hard to believe. I could believe that the first piece might be, and I hope it is, for God's glory, but the second or the third, too much of the good thing, I'm attached to it. It's a selfish clinging of the will to something created for its own sake. The pie has become a little God to me. So excess is a second indicator that something is amiss. The third sign is when we make things, and remember, things are not only material things. They can be my vanity or whatever it happens to be. Myself, I must prevail. When I disagree with you, I've got to prevail and I've got to win an argument. I'm attached, of course, to my selfish pride. I must prevail. So, when we make a thing, including immaterial things, ends in themselves, not as bringing you and me to God, but I just seek it for itself. In other words, that's our definition of a little idol, to seek something for itself, make a little God out of it. Then, of course, I'm attached to the thing. That could hardly be more obvious. We have only one purpose in life, into which all other activities and purposes are to be melded, brought into that one purpose. That is immersion in the Trinity forever, my immersion, your immersion, that we help one another to get there. And that is our end, our purpose in life. So to make things less than the God ends, makes them to be idols, and of course implies attachment to them. This is why we have it in Timothy 2:12, that we've been instructed by God to give up everything that does not lead to Him and all our worldly ambitions. We use all kinds of things, but to bring us and others to Him. That is getting things right. Now, we're getting closer and closer to John's teaching on this whole subject, and he's matchless in it. We're just preparing ourselves, what we said last week and what we're now saying this week, we're preparing ourselves to understand him intelligently and rightly. Two presuppositions John has in this whole subject. The first presupposition is that we are all called to what he calls perfect union with God. That's always in the back of John's mind, even when he doesn't use that terminology, which is the transforming union on earth, which blossoms into the unspeakable eternal ecstasy of the beatific vision in risen body. Now, the transforming union on earth, and I hope we're going to have time in this whole series to get to that toward the end of it, the transforming union is a complete oneness with God, so that there's nothing foreign to Him at all. When we reach the degree of purification of our defects in this life, we are then in the transforming union, which really does transform. As Paul tells the Corinthians in chapter 3, from one glory to another, we're transformed into the image that we reflect, the Trinity itself. Now, John, therefore, is taking it for granted always that we are called to this complete, perfect union. Now, that brings us to our second supposition. For this perfect union to happen with the all-pure one, capital A, capital pure, God Himself, He's utterly pure. There's not the least defect of any type in Him. To be united with Him perfectly, it's obvious we've got to be purified of anything that is foreign to God, anything unlike Him. Hence, of everything that's disordered, that is idol worship and so on, it all has got to go, or this transformation cannot happen. Now, I'd like to share with you two remarks. One of them is from the first letter of John in the New Testament, and the second one is a remark from St. John of the Cross. And how beautifully they supplement each other, and in a way say the same thing. First John in the New Testament. It's his first letter, chapter 3, verse 3. He has just referred to our final destiny when we are transformed because we see the Lord as He is. That's the beatific vision, and also seeing the Lord in His glorified risen body, matchless, unspeakable beauty. Then John says in verse 3, everyone who entertains this hope must purify himself, must try to be as pure as Christ. That is exactly what we're saying. So you'll notice, by the way, all through our series on this deep prayer life and now the great exchange aspect of it, all the way through we are utterly New Testament, but with the brilliance of John of the Cross to explain it to us. Now, that sentence, again, everyone who entertains this hope must purify himself, must try to be as pure as Christ. Now, let's listen to John of the Cross. In his ascent to Mount Carmel, Book 2, Chapter 5, perfect transformation is impossible without perfect purity. Purity, of course, does not refer only to one commandment. It refers to everything. As Paul says, whether you eat or drink or do anything else, all, not most of it, not only 98% of it, all of it for God's glory, then you are completely purified. Now we come to John and his specific harms that he so brilliantly explains, the harms that the attachments do to our spiritual life and our immersion in God. And I will be noting with you from John all the harms that come in our human relationships. I think one can say all of them. All of them, certainly, that I can think of at the moment are due to attachments. Quarrels, bickering, fights, hatred, it's all due to attachments. Clinging to things finite for their own sakes and clinging with the will. So that what we're going to do now, and this, what follows, is completely John of the Cross, but also completely gospel, is to specify, indicate individually what are the harms that come from clinging to finite things for their own sakes and not for the glory of God. And John is unbeatable in this area as he is in others as well. I know of nobody that discusses this question closely even in adequacy to John of the Cross. All the saints hold it, they say it in different ways, but John is in a class by himself here. Now, the first harm of attachments, as we have defined them, they dim supernatural vision. They cloud the mind. 1 Corinthians 2:14, the worldly person cannot understand things of the Spirit. It's nonsense to him, says Paul. Or as von Balthasar put it, sin obscures sight, and especially supernatural sight. It just does. This person cannot see. And attachments do that. They obscure our intellect in understanding lofty realities. Now, I'm going to share with you here a little passage of St. John of the Cross. It deals with people who more or less equate the spiritual life with devotions and exercises, as he would use the term, things to be done. Now notice, I'm not saying devotions are bad. We better be devoted and have devotions. I'm not saying that spiritual exercises are bad. On the contrary, we need them. But there are people who think that certain practices, the more you multiply them, the holier you get. And he's talking about these people who make spiritual growth almost only doing certain things. I've got to say this litany every day, or these five litanies every day, or I've got to attend to this alleged apparition, and I must attend to that, and it might be good, it might be true. And certainly litanies are good. Please do not misunderstand me. But people who make all these sundry exercises almost the entirety of their spiritual life, they are mistaken. Now, this passage from John is so important. It comes from the Ascent of Mount Carmel, Book 1, Chapter 8, Number 4. John laments, and I quote, "The ignorance of some people, which is extremely lamentable. They burden themselves with extraordinary penances," extra ones, additional, too many of them, "penances and other exercises, thinking these are sufficient for the attainment of union with God and divine wisdom." Now, John is not opposed to penance, prudent, sensible penance. And if you think it might be imprudent, get advice before you do it. He's not opposed to that at all, nor am I. But there are people who just multiply these things, and as John says, other exercises, thinking that is the whole package of the spiritual life. Then he adds, if these people would attempt to devote only half of that energy to the renunciation of their desires, meaning disordered clingings, meaning what we have defined as attachments, if they would devote half their energy to getting over these clingings, they would profit more in a month than in years with all these other exercises. I could hardly, unquote John, I could hardly overemphasize the importance of those few lines for the spiritual life. And we're talking here about sincere people who really want God. We've got to get this thing in order first, and then the other exercises, yes, prudently, not too many of them, though. Because the saints, for example, the Curé of Ars, St. Thomas More, indeed you can mention all the saints, they're the same about this sort of thing. This is why they have such remarkable insight into goodness, into God, into human relations, because they are so purified of their hindrances to sight. The second harm John tells us about, selfish clingings beget many other sins. Usually they're venial, but they are hindrances to growing in intimacy with God. They could be, and sometimes are, mortal sins that kill a relationship with God. Let me mention here, I just jotted down a whole list of them, how clingings lead to these other sins that occur. For example, clinging to TV as an addiction. TV's not bad. We're doing some TV right now. Can be very good indeed. But to cling to it as an addiction, it begets all kinds of other faults. Laziness, refusing to talk with other people, wasting time, infringements on prayer time, neglect of spiritual reading. All kinds of other faults come because somebody clings to this medium unreasonably. And all the clingings we're talking about, of course, are unreasonable. Not talking about other ones, good ones. Same thing with food. People who cling to food for its own sake will complain at the meal that this is not exactly the way it should be, and they're fussy about that, or there's not enough of this, and other faults come about because clinging to this thing. Waste of time, neglect of others, vanity, rash judgments, gossiping, all these faults occur because people are attached to things. Fearing what should not be feared. John mentions that explicitly. There are people who fear lots of things that there's no reason to fear them. Human respect is one of them. Am I pretty? Am I good looking? Do I have my reputation? Did I say something brilliant to impress people? That's a slavery. And all kinds of faults can come about because of that attachment. Oh, and this one is typical of John, the next example. The fault of a loss of a taste for prayer and for the Eucharist and for spiritual reading. People who don't have a taste for prayer or the Eucharist or spiritual reading, almost for sure, I say almost, maybe I should drop it, for sure are attached to finite things, clinging to them for their own sakes. They've got idols. And that's where those faults come from. Notice, I repeat it, I've said it many times, of course, but it's worth saying again, I think. Notice how brilliant John is in analyzing this. And if we don't get these things in order, there's going to be no progress toward God or very little, and we're going to have all kinds of interhuman faults and bickerings as a result. More about that because we have to return to it. This is all eminently practical for human relations, as indeed, even first of all, for our relationships with God. The third harm that comes from these clingings is that each attachment is an obstacle to prayerfulness because it prompts a focusing on ourselves. Again, I am the center, egocentrism. What I want is my concern. I'm just the opposite of being altruistic, whether toward God or toward other people. Rather than be concerned about the Trinity dwelling profoundly in each of us, And that's a whole subject in its own right. The person who's attached to things is distracted immensely at prayer time because of so many clingings. Now, there are distractions at prayer, I know. I'm human enough, like everybody else, to know that. But lots of distractions do occur, not from other reasons, duties, for example, but also from clinging to things, because that's what I want. And if I can foresee that I'm going to be disturbed about this, my prayer is disturbed at the same time. Obstacle to prayerfulness. The fourth harm. Attachments are an affront to God. Both atheists and theists can be extremely illogical and inconsistent in daily life. Let me speak first of the atheist, and then we'll get to the theist, because we all have this kind of problem. An atheist is inconsistent if he has an optimistic view of reality. He's not facing death, for example, and the disaster death is on the atheistic principle. Disaster. Honest atheists have faced it. I've read them myself. And therefore, an atheist who has a buoyant view of things is blocking out a lot of reality, I'm afraid. If he were consistent, the way I put it sometimes, he would want to go off into a little corner, and even twiddling his thumbs wouldn't be enough. He's got to have, on his premise, a very pessimistic view of reality. And if you think I'm exaggerating this, I refer you to Albert Camus, one of the most prominent atheists of our century, existential atheist, and he made the remark in one of his works that the serious question for human beings is suicide. On his premise, he's right. I don't say that he advocated suicide, but that, for an atheist, is a consistent premise. But most atheists, by far, are not consistent. Now, I'm not throwing stones at them. Theists, we, who do accept God, also can be very inconsistent and not act as though we did and do accept Him. If one holds, the theist does, if one holds that God is purest beauty, no end to it whatsoever, purest delight, purest love, and our destiny is to be immersed in Him and transformed in Him, so that, as John says so magnificently toward the end of the spiritual canticle, that we become godly, we even look like God, not in a pantheistic sense. But if a person holds this, and the consistent theist does, then that person would never seek anything finite for its own sake, would always seek it as leading to God, one's own self, and others. That's perfect consistency. It makes complete sense. Anything else does not make complete sense. So that, actually, to seek something finite for its own sake, especially if one knowingly does it, is an affront to God. As though this little bitty piddle of a thing, almost nothing, is comparable to God. Let me use an example here from marriage. If a husband says very nice things to his wife, as indeed he should, but he prefers TV or bowling to her, that's an affront to her. I don't say he shouldn't watch TV ever. I'm not saying that. And I'm not saying you may not bowl. I'm just saying that if any of these activities, and you could put a lot of other ones in place of the TV and the bowling, I'm just picking that out of the sky, and he prefers that to her, that's an affront to her, a kind of insult, as though these things are on a plane with her. Now, it goes the other way around. It goes for the wife, too. If she prefers whatever it is, ease or vanity or whatever it is, or could be some addiction to him, well, then that also is an affront to him. The next harm of attachments is that they are killjoys, illicit worldly pleasures, such as vanities, lust, avarice, gluttony, drunkenness, drugs. They do offer momentary gratifications. Obvious, that's clear. But they are inevitably followed by inner emptiness, disillusionment, boredom, alienation, conflicts. People who have renounced a seriously sinful life have said this. People who know what they're talking about and they're honest enough to have repented, they say this. I'm not saying it from my own head, you see. And sometimes they end up not only with hangovers, but with suicide. Living the gospel, that is, seeing and seeking God as the supreme end and all else in relationship to leading ourselves to Him, brings tremendous amount of joy. Even on earth, there's no doubt that the saints are the happiest men and women by far. And I've met saintly people. You probably have too. And if you're a saintly person yourself, you know this from experience. So that what we have in Psalm 119, verse 1, has it correct. They are happy whose life is blameless, who follow God's law. They are the happy ones. Or as Philippians 4:4, Paul says, rejoice in the Lord always. They're the only joy that can be always is in the Lord. In other words, living the sort of thing that we're talking about. We will continue and complete next week a few more of these harms of attachment and the positive beauty that a lack of them bring about.
Join us again next week at this time for John of the Cross, The Great Exchange on EWTN, Global Catholic Radio.